and welcome to episode 290 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of MI666 and Murder Road, and joining me, as always, are the creator of Viper and the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The creator of Atomic Hercules, and a man who probably has a lot of other names, some of which I'd like to say, because we were laughing about them before the show started, as they were an extra from a popular sitcom, but I'm not going to. You know him as Tony Esmond. I almost said Tina.
Right, Minjin Bracket.
Hey! And this week, we are joined by the creator of such titles as Bastard, Galaxia, Future Egg, and the new title, Mukbang, which we're going to discuss. It's Matt
Sounds
Simmons.
So wrong.
I know, but he's so right. It's Matt Simmons. Hello, sir.
Hi, everyone.
Listen, you did a comic about cats' bumholes. This is going to go well.
Yeah.
I'm feeling it's going to go all right.
Yeah. There's a lot of comedy in Matt's work, and there's probably going to be a lot of laughs later on. But before we start getting into the nonsense, there's a little bit of sad news. We've obviously got to cover a bit. Tony, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, so we're very sad to hear about the passing of Alison Brown. I don't know if a lot of our listeners will have met her and chatted to her. She was quite often at the desk at the Cartoon Museum. Mm-hmm. I used to sort of stroll in there on the way home from work and stuff. Really nice lady, really helpful. I know she was close to a lot of our listeners, Simon and Rachel and a few others. And we sadly lost her to COVID, which is an absolute shame. Mm. Such a nice person. So our condolences go out to her family and her friends, and that we definitely lost a good one there, I've got to tell you.
Yeah, very much so. It's very sad. We hope, it's just another reinforcement that it's serious business, that we're, it's still...
Yeah.
It's still a crazy world we live in, so we hope everyone's safe and okay. And, our condolences. A bit of sad news, really, to start off the show, I know. But, the Cartoon Museum was... you went there
It's a great little pit stop for me. I know Rich Sheaf goes in there a lot. Oh, a lot of us do, don't we?
Yeah.
I often, if there's a little exhibition going on, I'll meet some of our listeners in there and have a chat. And she was always there on the desk and always used to chat to her outside. And... if I was the lone bloke in the shop, I was that annoying bloke who used to chat to the people behind the counter. So, it's great. She was a great person. Yeah, and a real shame. But there you go. Community's lost someone. And let's try and not lose anyone else.
Yes, very much indeed. So we hope you're all staying safe and healthy. And, it's our aim to entertain you for the next couple of hours.
Yeah.
So thank you to everyone who's been listening to the show since 2021 started. It's going to be an interesting year for comics, as we discussed. I'll tell you what, any premonitions of what the year is going to be like is essentially null and void, because I have no idea what's going to happen this year.
I mean, 5 minutes ago people were saying, oh, I don't think we're going to get a convention till Thought Bubble, and now I'm even doubtful that that'll happen, because how will we get guests over, it's just a mess, isn't it?
Yeah, but we have to stay positive no matter what happens. We're still, people are still going to make comics. They're still churning out comics, zines, and we're going to be putting out this show on a weekly basis because it keeps us sane. He says, staring at a wall.
It does.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, of course it does. Yeah, we even turn our cameras on occasionally to chat to each other, which makes me laugh.
Yeah,
because Vince now looks like he's out of a grunge band.
Yeah. So and Dan looks like he's in a mid '90s pop band.
Yeah. He does. He has a little bit of the ahas about his appearance. Yeah.
If anyone's watching season one or two of Cobra Kai, there's a character in it called Robbie, and he's wearing these outrageous curtains. I'm kind of rocking. Okay, I can rock that look.
Is that what inspired the nunchuck photo?
As
people
you well
loving
know,
that, man.
I keep the nunchucks by my bed.
Yeah, just in case.
Why is that?
Because if I've got to get up and do some rice flailing,
you get up and kill someone. They're nice and ready, aren't they?
Yeah, it'd be me, because I'd brain myself with them.
I remember we all ordered them at school. You could order them out of the back of martial arts magazines and Brother Lawrence's name on them.
You're the generation that got them banned for ages.
That was us.
You're the reason why Michelangelo from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles never did anything, because he was the only one that had nunchucks, so couldn't use them.
I had a couple of those side-handled batons. They were good.
Nice. Tonfas.
Yeah. Is that what they're called, right? Yeah, of course.
I used to fuck around with that those nunchucks, and then one time I was doing this spin. My CP taught me, and I whacked myself on the elbow and basically my elbow down for the rest of the day felt like it had like slight pins and needles, and I didn't really ever touch him again.
All because you got slight pins and needles?
No, because it spun back and then cracked me on my elbow, and I was like, if I get into a ruck, A, I don't want to be carrying around a pair of nunchuckers, and B, I don't want to fucking take myself out of them. What's the point of this?
Yeah,
I think they were a classic look. Do you, if you wore like one of those sort of 90s canon movies, really long coats, you could tuck them in the back of your trousers, couldn't you, down your belt or something? They were a classic. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if it was sort of like early 90s, you could tuck anything down the back of your trousers, because that was the time when trousers were quite baggy, weren't they?
Front pleats. That's what I used to go for.
Oh, my word. There's a martial art.
But never fear, the nunchucks have gone back. Gone back.
Oh, got back to by the side of the bed.
Back to my side of the bed.
Yeah, good. Do you ever do like any role play? Oh, who's that sexy ninja coming in the window? Do you do a bit of that at home?
Yeah. Do you pretend you're
Panthro? That's a great idea.
Do you pretend you're Panthro from the Thundercats?
Oh, there's a ninja in my bedroom. Oh, yeah, it's a bit of that.
Matt's thinking, what the hell have I got myself into?
Yeah. Did you ever do sexy ninja at home, Matt, at all? Or?
No, but it's definitely going on the list.
It'll be a zine. Dan, you, of course, you're looking for ninja inspiration, aren't you? Is that why? Is that why?
You rumbled me. Yeah. Just the long con.
I'm a sexy ninja. I can see you, Dan. I'll tell you what else you can see. Loads of comics on Comic House. Hey! Go on, I deserve
There's got to be ninjas in some comics on there somewhere.
There has to be. I mean, Comic House, they're an indie comic marketplace with a difference, and there's loads of comics. There must be ninjas on there. Go on, let us know what there is.
In this selection?
Yes, there are.
See if I can search for ninja. Because are they?
Snake Claws is
on there. Yeah.
And that's got a ninja issue. We should check out. Anyway, if you go to comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on the database. Lots of indie publishers are just listing their books on there, and it's another way of start selling your book. But the app is amazing. It's being added to all the time. People from all over the world are adding their comics to the app. It's a subscription service. There's only £3 a month, and you get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics that's being added to all the time. What's on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Riders of the Apocalypse, Volume 1, Don't Take Your Guns to Town.
Jesus, that sounds like a fucking heavy metal album. I'm writing that one down.
Sketchbook 1, The Awesome Drinking Draw, June 2020.
Yeah, how cool was this?
Our buddy JWC.
Hey, she's put together the sketches she's done during the drinking draws and put them onto a book, which are a sketch which we can look at on the app.
Yeah,
there you go. How cool is that?
We've got the GGA, Galaxy Grappling Alliance, Volume 1, Issue 2.
Hey. Nice. I back that. It's a good one.
Publisher Art 92 Comics. You can check that out. We've got Hollow Girl, Volume 2, Beowulf, Appalachian Assassin, and the whole slew of Snake Claws comics, which I didn't read this week and I'm kicking myself for. I want to get on them ASAP because they look fantastic. And Vince gives them a glowing review.
Hey, people actually listen to me. Who would have thought? but yes, there's all that and more. And if you're a creator on there, it's really worth putting your book on there, and you know, because this community that listens to this show, I think most of the people who listen to this show must have a subscription, surely. If not, shame on you. It's only £3 a month. There's a 14-day free trial, and literally the subscription price is less than a big two. Well, actually, not even a big two. It's a lot of digital comics at the moment.
Quickly. Yeah. Mm.
I know a lot of them are £3.19, but I still grit my teeth when I.
Oh, for how much entertainment, I know.
But does that make me a cheat? I just sound like a grumpy old man, though, don't I? Is that?
No, I think the digital pricing, it can be a tough one to kind of nail down, but people definitely have a line where they think that's fine or that's a bit much.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to coordinate your digital pricing along with your actual pricing if you're paying for your pages. Yeah. So you can't think, well, each comic you sell will make the money up to pay the artist, because people don't think digital comics are worth that much.
Mm.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah. I almost think of digital comics as an extra. You know, so I sell the physical copies, you know, try and make my money back for paying the artist, and then the digital copies are almost like an extra along the way.
Yeah,
I agree. Someone put a poll on Twitter, and I can't recall who it was, but they said, like, do you keep your digital copies after you've got them from Kickstarter, and it was something like 70-odd% people said no.
Really?
And that's me included. Yeah, I don't keep my digital copy. Say if I've ordered a digital copy and the hard copy.
If it's a hard copy coming, I don't necessarily, but I always do if it's just digital.
Yeah. I don't even then all the time.
I just get into a habit of sort of downloading them, and sometimes they'll be in a folder for a long time. And, you know, I do have a to-read pile within the digital folder as well.
Yeah, I've got a hard drive that I keep them all on, that I keep comics per year, so 2021 comics, you know, it's like that.
Yeah. How do you feel about a digital comics, Matt? Because, you know, on your store, a lot of your stuff is actual, you know, some of it's handmade or printed, or, you know, you've got trade, you've got all kinds, but not so much digital. You know, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, it's weird because Bastard Galaxia is obviously a webcomic, and that's all digital and stuff. Hmm. But that's because I worked with Steve Gregson on that one. Outside of that, I don't think I've got any digital comics. I a running theme in my stuff is like that I'm shit with computers. So I never use them. Like, I even get annoyed that I have to type in my email address in the Kickstarter return, you know, survey form. Yeah. So I'm not going to use this. I really don't go in for digital comics. Like, nothing is, it's not, I just love physical comics. It's not like, you know, I sort of like hate them or the idea of them or anything. It's just, it's just really not for me.
Yeah, then nothing beats the sort of printed book. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like I think, especially with Kickstarters as well, digital becomes for me more important in terms of purchasing when it's overseas, because, you know, with this day and age, you just can't afford the, you know, if there's an amazing book, hopefully, I'm just hoping that the digital is decently priced, and you get a few extras with it. But I'll always try and get the physical book if I can. Sometimes, like, your budget can't stretch to that because you realise you've pledged on far too many Kickstarters over the past couple of months, and you need to pay rent. So sometimes, you know, the digital option's always got to be there for Kickstarters.
Some comics are just digital now. I know if you even beyond web comics, there's some Marvel stuff that's only digital. There's some DC stuff that's pretty much only digital now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a bit like you, Matt. I'm like, I love real comics, but I just kind of, I think this show more than anything sort of forced me into being a digital reader
you
as well.
You never used to read digital.
No, fuck all. And that's only, what, 6 years ago now?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that more because of the present situation, OT?
It may be. Yeah, so I think the present situation of not being able to get into a comic shop and pick up that, that Marvel have got that out this week, rather than having to, like, find it on a shit app that I use to order my pull list. The, you know, 3 months in advance, which doesn't have any thumbnails and just has names, and it's just a waste of time.
Medium of a comic, not being
So I kind of rely on the Marvel app and Comixology really to spot stuff. And quite a lot of the time, I'll spot stuff's out and then I'll go and buy it on eBay,
yeah,
a physical copy. You know, I do a bit of that sometimes, or every week I do that, to be fair. So,
love a bit of eBay, don't you?
I've fucking got so many trades off of eBay,
yeah,
locked down.
I just bought the whole of the Ace Trucking collection this morning off eBay.
Nice.
Yeah.
I bought that fucking Firepower after I saw you got volume 2.
Good. Yeah, it's good, man. It's good.
I've got a whole pile of trades I've got to get through.
Yeah, me too. I've got a bag in the car. It's just embarrassing to bring them in.
You don't fucking know how hard my life is. I'm fucking sort of laying in bed with all these fucking comics next to me, thinking, oh, I've got to read all these.
Oh, God.
Awful.
Oh, God, this is, you know,
first world problems.
What's the point, eh? I mean, how do we get out of bed? Sometimes I can't.
Oh, God, how do you do it?
No, I just don't. I just can't.
It's just so intimidating looking at all those comics. I think, oh, fuck this.
Oh, God. go on, Matt, cheer us up,
we
man.
We should do a webcomic.
We're just having the worst time here right now.
Cheers for you guys. So sorry.
Oh, God. But yes, there's
we need the lockdown to end because I need more inspiration for comics from Matt that include Cat's Bumholes. I need him to do a trip to the cinema to watch something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, it is a nice way to kick off.
Okay.
This sounds so funny because obviously, what I've learned from your work, Matt, is you are the unpredictable storyline, because I don't know what your next book will be about. You're a very unpredictable. You know, you go from, I don't know, one of your friends retelling Bram, the film Bram Stoker's Dracula, and you turn that into a piece of work. There's Cats, the Bumhole Cut. And then you've got things like mukbang. So
yeah, mukbang is the rudest word that doesn't mean something rude to me.
Yeah,
And that's the latest one. Where does your inspiration come from? And what does mukbang mean? And can we say it on this show?
Yeah. The weird thing is, I didn't have when I started writing mukbang, I didn't have a title for it or anything. And I was at work, and someone mentioned. When I was at college, we got a load of pizzas and had a big mukbang, and I was like, a fucking what?
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
And he told me what a mukbang
was. Oh yeah,
but as soon as he said it, I had no idea what he meant, but as soon as he said it, I was like, that's what I'm going to call the comic.
Yeah,
literally as soon as he said it. And he told me it was about like it's like a Korean thing where they do a broadcast over the internet, and they have like an obscene amount of food, and they just eat it and talk to the camera, kind of like imagine just like a podcast, I guess, it, but if you were just eating like obscenely the whole time. And I was like, yeah, I really love food as well, so that works really well. Like anytime in a film there's a scene where people are eating, that's always the scene that stands out to me. Like, oh, that was a good scene, that. But was it a good scene, or am I just a total pig? I don't know. But they're the scenes that always stand out for me. So, yeah.
There is that sometimes, I don't know why, whenever someone sat in like an American diner, just having like, you know, pancakes and bacon or you know, that sort of thing, I always think, oh, that looks really good. Whereas in real life, it's probably tasteless.
I think the difference is they have like these amazing diners with like this amazing food, and we've got like egg, beans and chips in a fucking dirty old cafe, haven't we?
You know, egg beans, do you fancy and chips some will be the new book from Matt later in the year.
It's like, oh, they do Bubble and Squeak in here, and it's like a little green shit lands on your plate. Yeah, it's like, well, I do like Bubble and Squeak.
And when they get fucking pizza, it's like fucking massive.
What's fucking wrong with us this week?
I don't know.
It always annoys me on a film when they order pizza. And there's about eight people, and they just show up with one pizza. I'm like, oh, thanks a lot to the pizza delivery person. And I'm like, yeah, right, mate. Like, I'd eat that all to myself. Like, why?
Yeah, what's
and they
the
always
problem?
Just satisfied with one slice. Like, oh, what a meal. Are you kidding?
Actors don't eat; they just have vitamin injections. It's fine.
Well, it's much like us, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, like as for the sort of getting the inspiration and stuff. It's just literally everything that I like, and I just like to sort of mix it together in whatever way I can think of, or just whatever's sort of really at the forefront of my mind when I'm making. Some of the stuff doesn't take so too long to make, and so I can do like the smaller zine and mini comics and stuff, and then with like longer form stuff like Future Egg. And things like that, and kind of mukbang falls into that as well. Is I kind of mix a lot more stuff together and see what ways I can make it work in the comic.
Yeah, because you put like you know looking at your story, you put just sort of lots of stuff together as well. It's not like just a little zine. You make like little cards, stickers, and I mean Future Egg itself, and certainly like when I got the Bastard Galaxia and Dracula from your Afterthought bubble. It's not just those two things I'm getting. You know, there's a little zine in there. I mean, because you're quite a fan of the sort of zine aesthetic as well, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, which is handy because I can't use a computer. It's good that I like handmade stuff because I can't do any better than that. But yeah, I like... to an extent, I like little bits of shit. You know, like when a comic shows up, I like it to have like a little sticker or something with it. Like some people don't like it, and, you know, fair enough, chuck it away.
But in some way, yeah. But if it's a little extra, I mean, sometimes we get all kinds of stuff, and I certainly like back to crowdfunding campaigns. Sometimes you're paying far more than you should just to get a bookmark. But you know, sometimes you get when you get a pack and there's all these little extras. Yes, certainly. I mean, I'm finding now that I'm putting stickers on everything now. Like the notebooks I have for like the podcast and stuff are covered in probably stickers I've got from shows and stuff like that. But the little extras, I quite like them.
Okay. I've got a little tin of badges I keep now because you seem to get loads of badges, don't we? Mm. We always seem to get badges, and I keep a little tin of them. Yeah, one day they'll be worth millions.
Mm. Yeah, let's hope.
They won't. They won't. They won't think I'm a hoarder. Yeah.
So you like the sort of homemade aesthetic, and you know, so you like giving people a little bit more when they order stuff.
Yeah, I try to. If I've got some stuff about, I'll throw in something extra. I always feel like sometimes it depends if I've got like a lot of orders and stuff because I don't know how people do it. Like when they're sending out things and all the envelopes are all drawn on and all this and they've all got little notes. Yeah. Oh, hi, how are you doing? And I get like three orders. I'm like, oh my God, I don't have time for this. I start having a breakdown.
I panic immediately. As soon as I get like three or four orders, I go, have I got enough envelopes? Where are these issues? What did I do with that? Have I got enough bags? What about backing boards? You know, I'll do that, a bit of that as well. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I should probably get a bit more organized. It's a real sort of Mickey Mouse operation, but like, yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I like people to sort of like, I like it, you know, when I get a comic and I open it and there's a little bit extra in there. I think that's kind of cool. So, yeah. As much as I can, I try and, you know, give out that kind of experience.
I mean, do you think, like, especially like with indie and small press comics, sometimes we have to go that extra mile for the people to, you know, the person who doesn't listen to this show, doesn't know of our work, and you know, has just found the Kickstarter or whatever. How do you think that affects someone who's bought the comic sight unseen? In a sense, you know, it's their first time to seeing your work, and then they get the comic through the post. I would have thought that's, you know, to see those extra bits, I get quite a buzz out of it, thinking that, oh, someone's gone a little bit, you know, they've done above and beyond. Yeah, yeah. I think, especially as well, the small press and indie scene, it does. We do have to work harder, don't we?
Do you think it's becoming a competition now? It's almost like if you don't put a picture of it up on your social media, people go, oh, did you not get it? There's a bit of that going on as well at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always feel really, really guilty if I don't post
yeah, me too.
Picture and stuff. I feel like I've let the person down and stuff. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to keep up with and everything. But, yeah, I know what you mean. I always feel that sort of like, oh, I better post a picture so they know that I've got
it. Yeah. Sometimes you think, well, having sent out like mine, you think, have people fucking got this or what? Because there's no way of telling. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. But, you know, if you look at it from the other side of the coin, and dare I say it, the business side, if you're thinking on that sort of thing, once you've sent it off, I mean, hopefully you'd like to, unless you're getting a chased up email, where's my comic? Once it's
dead beats.
What a bunch of dead beats. Once it's God. Once it's been
just
sent,
waiting for that email though that's going to say, oh, by the way, I didn't get my copy. Like,
I feel mortified when I get that. I feel really bad when somebody doesn't get their comic, and I'm like, oh God. And I'm always ringing Falpy and going, I'll get his address off the Kickstarter and I'll send him one now. You know, I'll do that. So yeah. I've just done it now. I've just written one out again to Canada. Because we got one returned, he just hadn't put his address on it quick, you know. So we've emailed him, we've apologised, we've sent it out. You know, it's like that. I was trying to rectify it straight away, I think.
Oh, yeah, good shout, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, because it is communication, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
as
we say, it's just like, you know, you lose the goodwill of people that are going to buy your comics if you don't communicate properly or go that extra mile.
Well, also, one of the things we sort of made reference to it there is... Your communication is not the message you're sending, it's the message that's being received.
Yeah.
So I can call all the people back in my comics, oh, you bloody wankers. And I can say that as a joke. But if it's not taken as a joke, when the people back get it, it's kind of...
I think the problem with the one you're mentioning there is that, it wasn't just that person. People backed it because the film director was involved in it.
Yeah.
You know, who necessarily won't have read, I don't know, whatever comic she's done, that where the language is a bit profane, or haven't looked at her social media where she is a bit like that, you know.
But that's...
People are just into the film director.
I don't like. I can watch a comedian or like someone who makes like these grossly obscene films, and I buy their work. I don't expect them to call me a. You know what I mean? Like. Do you know what I mean? Just because you betray that character, or that's the way you write.
A strike one.
Sorry. You do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't think
that's
least.
That's why I don't think Kickstarter is designed for these big professional creators. If you're in a position to have the ear of an editor put it out through a comic company, the amount of professionals, because, you know, I'm doing those the air quote right, things.
Yeah.
The amount of professionals who are late with their books far exceeds percentage-wise the amount of small pressers who are late with their books.
Yeah.
I can guarantee as soon as I back someone who's a professional on Kickstarter, I know it's going to take years sometimes.
To get that book.
But if I back one of you guys or, you know, any of our sort of buddies or people who just, you know, Oliveira or, you know, any of the...
Ryan K. Lindsay.
Ryan K. Lindsay or people like that. You know, I know it's going to arrive fairly promptly, and if it's not, there's going to be a reason.
Yeah.
So I think the big number books. I don't know if Kickstarter's the right place if you haven't got a distribution.
No, you shouldn't be using a distribution model. And if you're using it like, for instance, that is where you're trying to get your book funded so you can make it. It's the wrong. That's the wrong thing to do.
Yeah,
as far as I'm concerned,
I backed it, but the Keanu Reeves one is a prime example of that. Keanu Reeves has enough money to print that book. He's either in it or he's not in it. And
I don't know what that's the score is with that. To be honest, is he what part of it? Is he just like the face of it, or?
And it's being published by Boom, and I hope we don't start hitting this thing where it starts hitting comic shops before it's arrived in the post, and they really have to get if it's. I think it's the numbers. I think the amount that gets backed by someone like him. Or someone like, I don't know, Jim Starlin or someone. Loads of people are going to back their books. And I don't think they're quite prepared to be in a position to say, right, well, let's get this machine rolling, folks. You know, because they're just not.
But the thing is that, for me, that's on the publishers who are doing it. I think there's a lot of... because when things like this... And I'm going to defend Keanu Reeves because I bloody love that man. but seriously, you know... He had an idea, and he was like, how do I do this? And the publisher probably was like, oh, God, we'll do it, you know, because they know, as soon as that name's attached to it, your Kickstarter's successful within, like, half an hour. It's as simple as that.
I wonder if they think it's going to be more popular on Kickstarter because we'll get him doing, like, little promotional videos for it than if we just publish it ourselves. Because don't forget, Dynamite have put out books that have been movies he's made. And they haven't sold half as much as that.
Yeah, it is as simple as that. And also, a lot of people, I think, like the consumers, don't realise that after a certain point, he's not the one holding up why you haven't got your book.
And I think that's a fairly bad example because with that one we haven't had a failure in distribution because it isn't due out yet.
No.
And it's still being drawn. But I just worry when these people say, oh, you should put that on a Kickstarter to a professional, and it, like you said a few weeks ago, Vince, it goes on the back burner because they're busy doing other stuff, and they don't have the money goes, and they don't have the people around them who are ready to sort of start posting it all out, make sure that it's all been dealt with properly, and it turns into just some embarrassing. You know, there's been lots of examples of it, unfortunately, in the last few years of it just going wrong.
Yeah, just like this charade of sort of like stringing people along, and
yeah,
I mean,
you know, they've got no
another update. You know, 2 years down the line.
You know, from your yacht, Matt. you know, have you had any horror stories? Sounds terrible, but in terms of like distribution or like, you know, people sort of purchasing, because it's very important. You know, you got a big cartel shop. You know, things like Thought Bubble and the convention circuit. Are really important. Have you had any negative experience of people sort of buying from you? Not because of you, but sometimes consumers can just be pigs.
not so much really. Not at all. I mean,
I must say, after we spoke on the Thought Bubble episode, everyone should go back and listen to that. I purchased a couple of your books, and you were on it with communication.
Yeah, because I did need to. I'm pretty sure I did need to communicate with you about that, because
The check bounce again, did it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I went to the post office, walked all the way into town to the post office and got there and realised I forgot to put the books in the envelope, so I just had an empty envelope with your address on it. So I was like, sorry, brilliant. It's late, I'm going to have to go back when it's open again.
I mean, you know, I would have been like, where's this come from? is this a message? What is this? Yeah. No, but, you know, some people may not have even done that. It's just and it is that sort of, and I've been the same, sometimes I haven't been able to get to the post office. It just hasn't been possible. But it is that sort of trying to communicate with people or getting it done as soon as possible, isn't it? Which I think when it comes to some of the bigger publishers, I don't know.
It's not even the bigger publishers, it's the bigger stars sometimes, isn't it? Yeah. And they get, I've seen it where a big name has got someone around them who's got a bit of a nose in comics, and he's kind of the wheel behind the creator, and he's the one putting the book out. And you're like, you're having to go through him to get to the creator, to get the book out. And it's like,
Yeah, but kind of like making a comic book and getting it printed and distributed is different skill sets, aren't they?
Especially if it's in really big numbers. If it's all right for us when we're, you know, putting out 300 books or something, that's fine. Yeah,
that's fine.
But, you know, when it's like 3,000, 4,000 books, then you need to have that in place. Yeah.
Yeah. I would be kind of, if I was doing those numbers, I'd be like, oh, Jesus Christ, I'd be shitting it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't make no bones about it.
But I would be contacting a few mates and saying, like, can you put like these 5 days aside, you know, Saturday, Sunday, every weekend for the next 3 weekends, I'll rent a room and we'll do this. You know, it almost be like that. Yeah.
I'd get sleepless nights from that.
I think especially if you've got a full-time job as well.
Yeah.
And you're working around it, aren't you? If you're like comics are very much sometimes a one-person band. And so and just making the comics can be hard enough sometimes without worrying about the business and then the distribution. It's enough to give me a nosebleed. But people are still making comics, thankfully. We're going to read lots of comics this year. I've got a few books that are probably going to pop up in later episodes because I've been reading a lot of especially the digital at the moment.
Right.
Although my recommendation this week is a physical book that everyone should get. But this year, after the tricky sort of period in history that the world is having right now, I know it's certainly affected a lot of productivity, and I count myself in that at the same time. Now with the year ahead, you know, why make comics and what keeps you making, you know, what's the, Matt, what keeps you going, you know, because you must have, obviously Mukbang has come out fairly recently, but you must have a couple of ideas on the go. Are you very much someone that, like, here's something, makes a comic, you know, that whole sort of guerrilla sort of style of comic making?
Yeah. I mean, I've got loads of things going on, like, because what I like to do is, like, have lots of things going at the same time. So if I get sort of fatigued with one thing or hit a dead end, I've got something else to move on onto. And I have a lot of problems with my hands, and some days I can't draw. So some days I have to draw with my left hand. I've done a bunch of comics with my, like, little zines and stuff with my left hand and stuff, just kind of doing whatever I can. So, you know, I'll switch over one day and then to another. So I end up having lots of different things on the go, depending on.
You're still making comics, even
when you... Yeah,
it's
good. I mean,
poof. Yeah, he's a people can't child, get out of bed. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
Wait, Tony.
It's just, it really is just something that I love doing. And I started making comics when I was really, really super depressed. I don't think I realized at the time how depressed I was. But life just really didn't seem worth living. Luckily, I got help and I got better and things like that. But through that, I did sort of like start to kind of like assess my life a bit and think, you know, like, what did I want to do? And I always wanted to be a comic artist. And then I think I kind of realized I wouldn't be good enough to be, like, working for Marvel or anything like that. But it's when I discovered, like, the small press and saw lots of people of different styles and things like that, and people just putting out weird books. And you read the books and you go, what? Who? Why would even someone even make this? What is this even about?
But, oh, you've read our books then, thank you.
You start to realize that it's like, well, it was important to this person. It was important for them to put it out, and now I've read it, and you know, it's like so you sort of see all these different voices and stuff. So I started making it, making comics like during a really shit time, because I was just like, well, what's something that I would want to do? What would something that might, you know, start to make me a bit happier? And it didn't turn everything around for me, just that one thing, but it certainly helped. And I feel like when I did get better, I looked and I just went, holy shit, I can make comics, because I started making them when I was really fucking miserable. And and then when I got better and started feeling better, I was just thinking, yeah, I can do it. And I've carried on doing it. And it's my life's, you know, life's always difficult, but...
I think working
something that keeps me it's something that keeps me happy and sort of keeps
good.
The sort of difficult times in the background sometimes.
I think the muse sometimes I feel this way as well, mate. I think the muse works on different emotions, doesn't it? We're motivated to do stuff, like you say, to distance ourselves from some things that are going on in our lives that we aren't perhaps as happy with. But also, if we're experiencing the extremes of life, sometimes that translates into art, doesn't it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. For some people, they can sort of write very sort of explicitly about whatever they're experiencing in their life and make it into either diary comics or like a work about those things, and you know, they express themselves in that way. But like, I don't find it sort of translates as directly for me. I find it harder to create being miserable, but it does kind of come out in other ways. And
yeah, I agree, man. I don't think it necessarily has to be about you, does it? But it does translate into art in other ways. I mean, if you look at some of the... I mean, music's a great example of that. You look at some of the music that's been created in the last 50 years, a lot of it's been done when those people are in quite extreme circumstances, you know?
Yeah. I mean, how many times have you loved a band and they've done a couple of albums? It's like, oh, well, their new one's not the same, is it? No, because they're in a very different place, because they've got millions of dollars.
Someone like Joy Division or even Dylan or someone, you know, look at what's happening to them when they created such incredible work.
Yeah.
I think we use it. I think we have to use it. I think it's our responsibility, if we are, you know, in it, trying to be creative, is to use that, you know, that extremity, that little part of our lives in our art. I think it's a great way of getting better as well. I think, you know.
Yeah. And I just think having a creative outlet, if you're a creative person, is really important.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's my sort of motivation to carry on. I mean, even if I feel like I would definitely be making comics, even if I wasn't putting them out there, because the satisfaction I get from making them and feeling like I've, you know, kind of achieved something, I guess. And like I say, that it's not just sort of like thoughts bouncing on my head, I've made something and I can feel satisfied with that and move on to something new is really rewarding.
Yeah, so the motivation should never be I've made something so I can put it on the internet and show people I've made something. As we were always saying, Dan said it a few times, make it for yourself, man. You know, it's got to be the first thing.
Mm. But if you're not enjoying it and having fun doing it, why do it in that regard?
Yeah.
But I think as creatives, you've got to kind of a creator creates, and I feel like it's certainly periods where I've not been creating, it absolutely gets to me and I can never put my finger on it at the time, but like reflecting back, I always think it was because of that.
Yeah.
And I always equate it to like older people when they've got a job and like they're like, they're there all switched on and then they retire or they stop working and then that motivation goes out of their life and then they just become half the person because they're not engaged anymore.
There's that whole we used to joke about it in my last job, you know, everyone retires and they have a heart attack on the golf course, you know, because it's just not there. You need something that fires you up, don't you, really?
It is it does affect you, like when, like the create, you know, things just aren't going right creatively as well. Do you know what I mean? It's like when you, when you have that input. I mean, that's it's a place where I am at the moment with a lot of things.
Yeah, right?
There's a lot of ideas where they're just brick walls, or like, you know, I'm doing stuff and I'm just not happy with any of it, and then and it just builds up, and that can really get to you as well, because, you know, like you say, once you've done something, and a lot of some of the work that I've done and I've just churned out and put out, you know, it sort of pushed itself out there and is what it is. But sometimes you can get in your own head too much about a lot of things, and that's certainly
what you mean, like second guess yourself and say this is no good.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or it's like, oh, this isn't the epic piece that I want it to be, or I can't. You know, the amount of times you rewrite a paragraph or a bit of dialogue, okay, and it's just not working, and you hit that wall.
It's the way the things that do generate excitement in me. I'll hear something. I heard a song the other day, and the piece of dialogue I wrote was nothing related to the song, but something about the way that he phrased it allowed me to sort of hear my words. You know, there's stuff like that.
Yeah,
there's strange little things that motivate us into doing stuff. And I think once you do get it on a page and it's there in front of you, it does feel like a minor triumph, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and certainly inspiration is a big part of it, and sometimes they can come hand in hand with whatever the project, because Murder Road basically was born from listening to an album when we were talking about putting together an anthology, and I thought, what am I going to do, and it was just listening to a synthwave album, and there was a certain song and I was like, ah, right, there's an idea, let's develop that. Now Matt, you what dare I say, what inspires you, or, you know, you must have like notebooks full of like something someone said down the supermarket that you may turn into a
like mukbang.
Mukbang was a really specific thing, because I went to New York and I was looking around a few comic shops in the indie sections and stuff like that, and it was a really different experience to what I'd been used to for the few years before that, where I would mainly get indie books from Kickstarter or conventions, where you had the person who made it there going, okay, this book's about this, you might like it, blah blah blah. Yeah. I was in these shops and there was no one there telling me what the books were about, and I was just flicking through them to see if anything caught my eye and going, oh yeah, I'll take a chance on that. So I decided to just make a comic, write a list of all the things that would catch my eye. So there was one of these things on each page. So I just wanted to see if I could make a comic that was specifically designed to catch my eye. So it was with my own interest in mind, but with the thought that hopefully other people would like these things. So I wanted to just make a comic. So it was literally just a list of things that I like to see, sort of like ranging from, you know, well, you know, foods on there, or just like a person in a wrestling mask, all the way through to just like some pretty obscene stuff.
What you mean, like the blueprint of a robot, and then you've got, like, let's face it, you've got a phallus. A blueprint of a phallus.
Yeah, I thought a robot with a giant cock would just be funny.
Because you did an interesting thing, because with Mukbang, you've got it as the pinned tweet on your profile as well, isn't it? It's very much, like you say, you've gone for this convention table aesthetic of people want to, you know, before they buy a book, they like to look through, don't they? And so you've literally got an image where it's the whole book you can just look at, isn't it? And it's like a kaleidoscope of different ideas and colours, and, you know, it looks like the discography for like a bunch of amazing bands.
that's cool you to say, man. Cheers. Yeah, like I say, like with the idea of it being a comic someone could flip through and work out in sort of 10 seconds whether they'd be interested or not, like there's a lot less opportunity for people to flip through comics physically these days. So I just had the idea, since I've done them all by hand, they're all on pages, laid out all the pages and took the picture so people could just have a glance at the book in that way, in one picture, and work out if they wanted to do it. But I was really pleased at how all the sort of pages looked once I'd put them together. It really was kind of like a Frankenstein type thing. A lot of the pages were done sort of like separately, so they were all had quite different sort of looks and feels and stuff, and it was nice to see them sort of finally sort of come together and stuff. But yeah, and that's like a lot of my stuff. It is just like a huge mix of stuff that I like, and I sort of try to incorporate as much as I can. Like, even down to with Mukbang, like, I really like behind the scenes. I really like knowing how things were made. I really, really love audio commentaries and stuff like that. Yeah. So I kind of put my own dialogue in Mukbang and stuff, and kind of almost like a little commentary, but tried to incorporate into the comic and things like that.
So as you're reading, you're sort of doing a commentary, like a written commentary as well.
I've got sort of the white dialogue boxes in the comic, and me just sort of like explaining the ideas behind the comic and the things that I like, and then I sort of like go in a bit and sort of interact with what's going on in the comic. Sometimes I've tried to sort of like intertwine it in sort of like interesting ways, so it's not just me yammering on. I didn't want to sort of interrupt the flow of the comic too much. I just try and incorporate everything that I like in some way. So, like, even to the point where there's like a centerfold, like a mini porno, like, because that would make me buy a comic, you know. Like.
Yeah. Is there anyone that you look to as a sort of contemporary of you at the moment, Matt? Because there's this sort of undergroundy feel stuff is. There's a bit going on here and there, isn't there?
Yeah. I don't know. I can certainly think of like people who inspire me and who I aspire to be like.
Okay.
In some ways, but I don't know. I'm not sure I'd want to sort of like say, oh yeah, this person's like me, because I don't want to insult them.
Okay. How about people that inspire you then? Should we say that? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Simon Hanselman, who does the Meg Morgan Owl.
Yeah, sort of nice. Thing.
I really love how he manages to just put some really out there, insane, weird ideas into these stories, and they fit really well. And he really does sort of like. It feels like he does just sort of like incorporate anything that he wants into these comics, and he does a really good job with it. And they're like incredibly like hilarious. I feel like he's unparalleled in that sort of like comedic arena. Like he's really at the top of his game. Like he's always someone I look to. Every time I read stuff, how does he do this? How does he consistently do this? Just like I do kind of like sort of like obscene humor and things like that, but without being I don't know. I also don't want to offend anyone. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
There's
a fine line, isn't there, really?
I mean, if you are offended by pornography, then I can't help you, you know.
There must be people you can guess who would read this and be. And I'm not a great believer in offence, as a lot of, you know, but there must be some people that would read this and be a little bit offended. There's a bit.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So they wouldn't be the people you're selling to, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I'd also be like, well, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to pretend like I don't like pornography just because you don't
like
pornography.
But you thought about that you thought about that with the aesthetic, like the cover of Mukbang has the classic, you know, the triple X. The private shop, the distributor, you know, the three X's that are very close together. You got that on there, and you quite clearly say adults only, for reals, mum, don't read this, please.
We can't have you.
So
for a sensitive people of a sensitive nature, I like is a great one to use.
Yeah.
I think
as long as, you know, people can be upfront with it. I mean, the thing that we're seeing more of, I think, is certainly over the past 10, 15 years as well, is there very much a lot of this irreverent, full-on punk rock sort of aesthetic of like, we don't give a fuck and we're just going to go for it, sort of, you know. But the style of the books or the style of the animation and stuff like that is very... It does look very family friendly, you know, because it does have an all ages kind of feel. It'll, you know, someone will do something that's deeply twisted, probably absolutely hilarious, but it will look like a classic children's illustration.
Yeah, there's a lot of My Little Pony porn out there, isn't there? Let's face it.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, from a parent's perspective, I guess sometimes it probably could be quite a tricky thing. I mean,
well, we've had it at conventions where someone's come around and said, "Oh, we get this for little Johnny, whatever." You go, "Oh, no, 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 don't,
yeah,
don't buy this."
No, no, no. Yeah,
I had my cousin. I sent him a copy of my Viper, and he said, "Oh, I've just given it to Harrison." And I said, like, "Don't give it to him, man. He's only like 11." And he went, "Oh, cheers." He said, "I've just seen it. Yeah, thanks, Dan. Because can't be reading that."
Yeah, I remember when I made the first Future Egg. You know, I showed it to some friends and stuff to get to see what they thought about any changes and stuff. And like a couple of people said, "Well, you know, like there's only one swear word on it. In it, he says fuck one time. Like if you just take that out, it could be for all ages." And I was like, "Yeah, I know, but I really wanted to say fuck there. Like you would say fuck. Yeah, like,
yeah. There for a reason. Yeah.
He's
got to
say fuck. Yeah.
I thought as." We went further and further into the future, we'd be like less and less like what's taboo, and we just everything's up for grabs. But it seems like there is a kind of you can't say this, you can't do that, and
I don't know whether
I really didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. We talked about this recently, didn't we? Who thought that the young kids would be the prudes and the old people would be the ones who are going around saying the c-word? But
yeah,
it's
here we are.
I don't know how much of that is real. I don't know how much of that is just attention seeking pretentiousness online, because we've never had, and you see the shit we put in our books, tribute, we've never had a bad word about it.
Yeah,
not we've had bad words about the script and about the art and whatever it's going to be. People don't, it's not for them, but we've never had anyone go, "This is disgusting," you know. And we fuck a unicorn in one of our books.
Yeah,
I think I'm the only one that said it, isn't it?
That virtue signaling of kind of want to be seen to be doing the right thing, even though really you don't really give a shit either way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could tell a personal anecdote about that happened today, and I was going to share with you too. It's fucking annoying.
Just did then. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'll tell my one because it's pretty safe.
Okay.
The broadband was supposed to be going in February where I live to get high speed broadband because mine's awful. And some gas works, they had to postpone it to later in the year. So I put something on our local groups and I wonder if we could write to the MP, see if we can get something done. I don't write to the MP ever anything, but if it's fucking broadband, pull your finger out. And someone said, "Oh, well, I wouldn't want the gas works to be put off. We don't want to do something without heating." And I was obviously, I'm not saying some old deer's not going to go without heating just because I want faster broadband, you fucking idiot. Does that need to be said? Obviously it does.
I can cleanse mine so once at a place I worked at, I happened to say to a member of staff, "I think midgets are cool," and because they are, it's not a bad thing to say, and they went to the boss about it. They didn't object to me. They just went to the boss and said, "Oh, Tony was quite offensive about midgets."
What did he say? Midgets are cool.
I wasn't. I think they go through enough. I think they're pretty cool. And I got called in. I think he just said to the member of staff, "It's only Tony, don't worry about it." But which is because thankfully that's a reputation I've built up. But that person I know is, you know, in their own life, is not that virtuous.
That's pretty sad, you know.
Yeah, he is.
That's pretty sad. Throwing people under the bus.
Email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com if you want to.
If you don't think midgets are cool, please email us.
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying like everyone who sort of says a good word online is fucking virtual purchase signaling.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's instances like that, which. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going with that.
A lot of us seem to get away with it. I mean, I think you do have to be transgressive in your art on occasion. I do think, you know, we've all made art that is a little bit out there. We push the boundaries a little bit because it's part of taking chances with your art, I think.
Mm.
You know, I mean, look at some of the killings in your books, Vince. Look at some of the stuff in Viper, Dan. Look at some of the stuff I did, and look at some of the stuff you do, Matt. It's not, you've got to take your chances, man. It's the nature of art. If art is safe, we're done for as a race. We may as well just give in. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, there's a lot finer men than us that have kind of commented on the situation and kind of been browbeaten down and sort of say, "You can't talk about this. You can't talk about that." That's like, no.
There's that great Hitchens thing I put out, wasn't there, the other day? But the bloke just stands up and starts asking him questions. He said, "No, no, no, no.
Nah.
You want to ask you a question about this? No, you're not going to answer me. Ask me a question. No. Sit down. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that reaction. Yeah. It's not interesting. Your opinion.
Don't care.
Yeah. Taking it. Yeah. Anyway, back to Matt. Sorry, Matt.
But yeah, when I was making Mukbang, every night after I'd worked on it, I went to bed and I was lying in bed just thinking, I can't do this. Like, what have I done? Like, I can't put that out in a comic. but then I would also be reading so many comics where just, like, published acclaimed comics where just so much weird, bizarre shit is happening. Like,
oh man, look at, it's been going on for decades. Look at Zap magazine or Weirdo or something like that. Yeah. There's like so much going on.
Yeah, and then I just got the idea that why shouldn't I?
Yeah, why not?
This comic with all this stuff in, and I just think, you know, I'm glad I didn't hold back. Actually, when I made the trading cards to go with it, I held back on one of the trading cards because I wanted to. Whenever you're talking about drawing breasts, you just sound like a weirdo. But I wanted to have some bare breasts on the trading card. And I was like, no, I can't do that. I can't do it. And I didn't put them on there. And then when I got the trading cards back from the printer, I got the trading cards back a while before the comic was done. And then I was like, oh, I wish I'd put the tits on the trading card.
Yeah.
That's
the part of the show, Vince.
It kind of steeled me for the rest of the comic. We're like, no, I'm not gonna hold back. And I didn't. And I'm glad. I'm really glad that it's got such a nice reception from people and stuff. And, you know, people seem to really enjoy it. And I just think, yeah, that's the thing, because people are mature and... Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't encounter a lot of these sort of, like, reactions from people in real life. Like I say, I don't want to offend anyone, but at the same time, like, I'm not going to act like, you know, like... a pair of breasts in a comic is the worst thing ever. Or,
yeah, you're not going out to offend people, like, on purpose.
Yeah, a sex scene is not the end of the world, and swearing is not the end of the world. So, you know, like, if those people get offended, like, well, what can you do? Like, I'm not...
Yeah. I think they choose to be offended about comics. There's comics and movies, I think, the two things in TV that people choose to be offended about. Yeah. There's so much else going on in the world which they could be offended at that's genuinely fucking awful, you know, but they seem to choose a pair of tits on a trading card. Do you know what I mean? It's like... Yeah.
Fart knows.
So what?
Anyway,
when you were creating Mukbang, what were those books and what were those inspirations you were like, you know, that fueled your fire while you're creating this crazy book?
The books that I bought in New York were just sort of like a weird bunch of indie books, and I did like a live broadcast on Twitter after I got back, and where I showed the books, and I said at the end of the book, I was like, yeah, it's got me this idea to sort of like make a comic based on what I bought. And then I actually did it. And that's really good for me that I actually did it. I was really proud of myself. I was like, I can't believe I said I'd do something. And then I did it.
Could you remember the books, dude, off the top of your head? Or?
Yeah. Not very well. There was loads of them. There was like a whole bunch of them. There was one called, called Mowgli's Mirror. Which was really good. It was like a silent comic, and it was like Mowgli from the Jungle Book, and he lived in the jungle, and he saw his reflection, it was all these sort of like mirror, it's all this like mirror imagery where he saw his reflection in some water, and then an ape scooped up some water, but his reflection was still in it, and then drank the water, and it showed the water going into the ape's stomach, and as it was going down its esophagus or whatever into its stomach, it was like kind of like the shape of a sperm sort of thing with his face on it, right. And then the ape was pregnant and started to give birth, and he saw the face coming out of the...
See, I knew you could get pregnant from blowjobs. I've been saying that for a long time.
An autobiographical book then, basically.
Yeah, and he saw the face coming out of the ape's vagina, and he helped the ape give birth or whatever, and then he sort of like raised the ape, the baby with the ape and stuff, and they had this family, and there was all this like mirror.
You've just sold this book to an awful lot of our listeners.
I'm going to look this up later on eBay.
It gets even better because spoiler alert, He's walking along the jungle later and he sees an elephant giving birth, and there's like a face coming out of the elephant. So he goes to help give birth, but it's actually just a giant shit that falls in his face. that was the thing that made me go, oh yeah, I'm getting this.
I love any comic book that sounds like it's been made by people in an insane asylum. Yeah. That's the best place, you know.
Like outsider art.
Like Man versus Rock. That was what we suspected they may have been in an insane asylum. I've met them and they probably were, to be fair.
Yeah, they probably were.
Yeah, that's great.
So you sort of lean towards those sort of crazy, irreverent sort of titles.
Yeah. One of the books, I'm still not read it, but one of the books is just called Shit and Piss. And I flipped through it and I think from what I gleaned from like just flipping through, it's just like about a man made of shit and a man made of piss. I don't know. It's just like weird, obscene stuff, and I just think, who's made this? Why has someone made this? But I'm really glad that they did.
Yeah.
I just like kind of like stupid ideas, obscene humor and stuff. But there's also some other really good stuff. There's one called Horror Hospital School, and it was kind of like it was a comic that kind of like the cover was like evocative of like sort of old school horror comics sort of thing. It's about this. It's kind of like almost like a YA type thing where this girl wakes up in a hospital, but she's got special powers, like weird sort of horror based powers. But it's also a school, and then there's someone haunting the school, and it was weird. It had kind of like X-Men sort of vibes, but like in a way sort of scaled back indie sort of way. That was really good. I really enjoyed that. There's loads of sort of like weird stuff, but like. There's like a huge list. I'll dig them all out again, and I'll write a list.
We'd love to.
I can't remember a lot off the top of my head. But
yeah, let us know what they are. Definitely, yeah.
Certainly, I think you know, we know how sort of out there sort of some of like the UK sort of creators that you know they're pushing the boundaries, they're doing like really random stuff. But certainly, like when you look further afield, or when you look outside, wherever you are in the world, I think when you look. You know, especially the States. You look at some of the indie books in the States, and they're just crazy, just absolutely crazy. Some of the stuff.
What about that Cobra book you brought back for me, Tony?
Yeah, that's nuts, isn't it?
That's fucking nuts. That's got like.
I really want to get that Cobra book. Yeah. It's amazing.
They're really nice people as well. They're like, I think they're Israeli, aren't they? They're like a little commune of artists who work together, and they were. I stood at their table for hours on Glenn. Really fun people. Yeah.
But there's like gang rape on a bulldog on there, which is like pretty fucking hardcore.
What?
Yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah.
What?
That's he comes around the corner. There's a whole gang of like street youths about a gang rape a bulldog, and he stops them mid act. That's like in the book. That's not.
That's a hero to me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to be honest, there's so many titles I could use for this episode.
Yeah. Like I said,
that one stunned me. That one.
Yeah,
I don't even know what to say to that.
No, I was reading it. I was like, "What the fuck?" I mean, the whole experience was "What the fuck?"
God,
it's like they pitched to Nobrow the other day. That firm, they did. I swear to God,
that alongside Hilda. Jesus Christ!
Oh dear, it's like when I came across that one on Comixology, Horsera. Do you remember when I talked about this?
Yeah.
That is just absolutely fucking insane, and worth checking out. And also, they got in touch with us, and we're very, very appreciative, which is quite cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but that's another one that's just sort of, it's just really feels like creators just going out there, man, and just
Just
got to be a bit dangerous, man. We got to be a bit out there, otherwise, it's just dull and banal and boring and everyday. We got to start thinking out of the box. It's the only way comics improve. That's how 2000 AD became a hit, because it was so out there. That's how Marvel Comics became a hit. You know, that's how lots of these people become a hit. It's because it's just strange.
Yeah.
I've got to say, like, I am like working on more stuff now, and now I do worry a bit where I just go, well, it's not got anyone's butthole in it. Like, what if no one likes it? Why if people buy it? And like, what are you doing?
The buttholes were very popular, my friend.
I mean, is that what you want to be known for, Matt?
I don't know. I feel like it's already going that way. I mean, like, it's like when Squall magazine got put in previews, it was like, oh my God, I'm in fucking previews magazine. My name's right there. And it's like, Matt's the butthole cuts, Matt Simmons, like the butthole cut preceded my name in previews magazine. It's like, shit, that's what I'm fucking known for now.
That's me. Yeah.
That's never leaving the internet.
Yeah. Oh shit. So it's just like, yeah, be careful what you name your books, people.
We do make our own reputations, don't we? They do sort of build up and sort of catch up on you, don't they?
Yeah.
I feel that. I feel the power of that, my friend. Yeah. I like people to mention the comic I'm working on and give a little nervous giggle afterwards. That's what I'm aiming for. Yeah.
There's a lot to be said for sort of dangerous comics. You know,
Yeah.
I mean, obviously nothing completely wrong.
Nothing illegal, or
harmful to anyone else, or like, you know, just downright.
I mean, we're not cannibal Holocaust. We're not actually hurting people to make our comics, are we? Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah, we're not telling people to go and burn down Congress or something.
Yeah,
well, I can tell that Cobra comic isn't meant to be in any way real. It's totally fucking nuts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, it's almost that Adult Swim sort of audience as well. You know, there's all the cartoons that came out that it was just really sort of weird and trans. You know, sometimes some of my friends at college would talk about them, and then I'd watch them and just go, this is fucking crazy. And certainly, you know, for a cartoon, it is out there. You know, and I feel like comics is having another wave of that.
There's that theory, isn't it, that comics boom during, you know, times when times are tough.
Yeah,
and you know, when you think about Superman, Batman, the period that came from, and you know, you think about the boom in the 70s and during the 3-day week and the 80s, you know, and you know, London and England was a poor place to live, and yet they're producing this amazing art. And I think maybe look what's happening to us now. Maybe that's where the next roll on will come from.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot to be said for, especially in these times, books that people can relate to, that are very honest and truthful, and like speak about subjects that are happening and going on. And equally, there's that element.
There's the flights of fancy to be had.
The escapist, you know.
Yeah, I mean, look at the art that was created. Look at the art and the music and the movies that were created during the Vietnam War, when the Vietnam was happening in America. You know, it's still seen as the great creative, you know, explosion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think certainly with some of the sort of larger publishers and stuff, some of these books are made to be escapist, and people take them at a different value than they're meant to be, and they make them into something that they're not.
You know, it's the next book burning, isn't it? It's the next
When let's be honest, there's probably a lot of comics out there that are really offensive and should be stopped, as well as
just
all this stuff
from a quality point of view, to be
but no, you know, I think looking at it this way, you know, obviously 2021, I think, you know, obviously, Matt, you're going to churn out more comic. You know, you're doing it for the love, and that's what anyone loves to hear and see. And also, you can make a comic out of fucking anything, which is a talent. We'll try not to call you the butthole cuts, Matt.
Leave it down, butthole.
Thank you.
There's a certain exciting possibility of some crazy sort of creativity happening over this time. I mean, I know you said it several times, like, you know, Tony, when times are hard, you get some of the most exciting creative work.
Yeah. And, I know you in the past, you've collaborated quite a lot with a writer, haven't you, Matt? Are you looking to collaborate with anyone else at this time, or is it mostly just your own stuff now?
Well, yeah, I mean, collaboration's been with Steve Gregson, who did Galaxia and stuff. So
he was the guy I met at your table at Lake, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he does all, like, the final art for Galaxia. So we kind of worked together on that one.
Right.
So going back and forth, like, we kind of write it together, and then I do the page kind of as I would do it. I sort of design the page and do a rough, and then he sort of like almost does like an editing pass, and he does the page sort of proper sort of thing. So that was a really cool way to work. So yeah, I'm hoping to get some more Galaxia done with Steve. So I'm looking forward to doing that again. But yeah, I'm working with another writer who did the Dracula comic with me, Farron Jones.
Okay.
I've got a comic that's hopefully going to be out this year that he's written called Riot Gimp. which is about a gimp who causes riots, but not necessarily on purpose, just riots happen when he's around. And it's
I mean, if ever there's a book that is of the times.
It's hard to talk when you've got a ball gag in your mouth, isn't it? You don't face it, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. Like, Farron came up with this ages ago. Farron's a big time anarchist, so like a lot of this stuff that's happening now, he's kind of just like, oh yeah, this is what I was talking about.
Right, my friend. Yeah.
Oh, please tell me as well. Please tell me there's going to be more of Farron Jones's Bram Stoker's Dracula. Please.
Oh yeah, I think there's got to be. Loads of people asking for that, but in all honesty, we were just going to do the one because Farron's like, he's like, the middle of Dracula's really, really boring. I can't be bothered. And the way that Dracula came together was just like a total fluke that it worked out so well, really.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I'm nervous about going back to do another one and trying to recapture that magic. But it's been so popular and so many requests for it that I feel like I've kind of got to. So I talked to Farron and trying to sort of bring him around. But like, that's the thing, even with the middle of Dracula being boring, I just think with Farron doing his sort of like commentary and explanation of the story, you can still make that interesting.
Oh,
you
know, yeah,
I mean,
totally.
The fact that he finds it boring,
yeah,
could just ties in really well. So yeah, I'm hoping we're gonna do more. But like I said, that's a comic that's like really labor intensive to put together each issue. But I get so many orders for it, I'm just like, oh, for crying out loud. So it's gonna be more of that, I think. But yeah, we're hoping to do another one. So hopefully more collaboration, but mainly everything I've got planned is just with the people I've worked with already. Like I say, more Galaxia and more work with Farron. But you know, I've talked to a couple of other people, so yeah, maybe.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting. Good stuff, man.
So there's going to be lots more coming up for later in the year, which is good to know. And and I know a lot of our listeners are big fans of your work anyway.
Oh, that's nice. Thanks so much. Cheers, guys.
Whether it's eggs, cats, or whatever you're. But we will call him Muckbangs, Matt Simmons.
Yes.
That's what we'll call him.
Muckbang.
I had a whole other idea about what that meant, I'll be honest with you.
Like I said,
can only imagine.
Words. I was just like, yeah, that's the title. Now, what does it mean? But yeah, worked out pretty well.
How many times have you been asked what it means?
I don't know, this might be the first time actually.
No. Another groundbreaking interview, chaps.
Wow, what an exclusive.
I don't get to talk to people very much these days, you know. Most of the people just,
yes,
yeah, I tell my mum and she's like, oh, that's nice, dear, you know.
What's the book about?
don't read it. But yeah,
you've put on the front of that book that it's not for mums.
Yeah.
Like,
mind you, you've been to Croydon recently, my friend.
Have a copy, but I was like, seriously, don't open that. The minute you even open that, you're done. Like, that's it. You you know, you've entered another world.
It'll never leave your eyeballs.
Yeah, but my mum's really supportive. She was like, oh, I just like a copy, you know. you have supported me a lot, but you know,
here's your copy. Keep it in the bag.
Keep it cut, yeah.
Just in case it's worth money.
Oh dear, yes. But you should go forth and get a copy of it as well as the rest of it. Where can people? I mean, we'll reiterate this at the end of the show. But if people want to go now, where can people go to get your comics?
Oh MattSimmonsComics.bigcartel.com nice. Is where you can. Buy the physical comics, and if you want to check out Bastard Galaxia, which is free to read, it's all there at bastardgalaxia.com.
Nice
work, man.
Nice. And this has been a long time coming. You've been a friend and supporter of the show for quite some time, and we always see you at the drink and draw, which is always
lovely. Yeah, it's good to see you, man.
One of the only good things to come out of this whole situation is, you know, the restaurant I work in is closed, so I can get Friday nights off now, so I can make the occasional drink and draw finally.
So it's always good. Yeah, we're never half the time we're never aware of who's there and who's not, isn't it? Because people turn up, literally put their heads down, do some amazing artwork, and then go, right, I'm off. I'm like, hey, were you here?
Huh.
there's a lot of people at those things. I find it really overwhelming sometimes. I'm like, geez.
Can be, can't it? Yeah.
Especially when the stuff that everyone's talking about is just a load of old nonsense.
What
I said about sticking us maybe in separate, like do a couple of smaller rooms, so we
did at Thought Bubble, you mean? Yeah. Depends on numbers, doesn't it, and who's there, because some people don't mind just listening. In fact, some people come along just to listen, don't they? We get that back occasionally.
Yeah.
It's a bit like listening to a live episode, some people say.
Oh god. And if anyone wonders, no, I'm never going to record the audio of the Drink and Draw.
Christ.
But partly especially if
Cliff and Sarah are there.
Yeah.
And John Ottaway as well.
Sarah drinks a bottle of wine.
I don't want to be called up by some judge to give evidence against you.
Oh dear. Yeah, it just wouldn't look good.
Did you see that Sarah did a badge of Cliff holding up a bit of paper that just said Tom on it when Tom muted him that time? She made it into a badge and sent it to him.
Amazing. Amazing. As was in this chat. I mean, I feel like, as always, I feel like we could talk all night. And we actually got into some pretty deep and sort of genuine conversation.
It's gone quick, see?
Yeah, it has gone bloody quick.
I know. Where does the time go? But it is that time. And Matt's sticking around for the... Because he's going to recommend... I mean, he's already given some lovely recommendations.
Yeah.
Unless
you like the Jungle Book.
That's the one.
But there's going to be even more coming up. But before then, what shout-outs do we have, gents?
I've got a couple. So thanks to Stu Moraine, who sent me my Troops mug, and a Kirby lanyard done by Mr. Hanks. I got that through the post this week. It's very kind of him.
Oh, nice.
Hey.
Yeah. And about to hit Kickstarter on the 21st is CPS, Child Possession Services, which I reviewed over on the site today, and is about a government agency that investigates children who are possessed by demons. But strangely, it's done with quite a good sense of humour. So go and have a look at that one. And it lands on Kickstarter on the 21st. You got there, my two.
Nice. Butcher, do you?
The self-portrait drawing challenge. Monday, 25th of January. We're looking for you to draw a self-portrait of yourself, obviously. Any medium. And we're going to put a thread up on the day and you can post it. Yeah, lots of people already done it already.
Yeah.
Some absolutely amazing results.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I look forward to... seeing the rest of them come flooding. I've got to do mine yet.
Yes, and that is, if you want to see all of them, they're in the Awesome Comics Talks group on Facebook.
Yeah.
Which is good. We haven't had there is now four moderators checking out. And now that Tom's joined, one sensible one. So
we haven't had an influx. I feel a bit bad because we made Tom a moderator, and then we haven't had any like nutty ones in for the last. Yeah. Oh no,
we did have that. Yeah,
look,
you totally
bottled it with that other one, Tony. You should have
said
no.
Through.
Why?
I felt bad.
Why?
Yeah. Well, she might be a listener.
It's clearly not a listener. Clearly,
she liked that comic
about
the clockwork things.
I know we built out quite a membership.
No, the puzzle one. The puzzle
That's
one.
It. That's if, it. I what? Think she meant my comic. Yeah.
Springworth.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's
she said
in.
The puzzle one.
If you're listening, thanks for listening. Be sure to stick around. Clearly not a listener.
What are you doing a knitting? Listen, oh, yeah, it's me.
Don't
be ageist, you pig.
Knit one, pearl one. Well, knitting's for all ages, thank you.
Oh, see that? He just smashed the serve right back at me, and I got no response. Yeah. I got no response. 15 love, Butcher.
I know we've built up quite a few people in the Awesome Comics group, but like if we had a better forum to sort of like people to have a thread where they can post up stuff for crits and different work areas, not just one constant stream where people have a conversation, but it gets pushed all the way down. Because there's times where I've gone back after not being on there for a little while and scroll down and think, oh, that's fascinating, that little something that's put there and comment up.
It's just Facebook's formatting, isn't it? It's just that's the problem, shit. Isn't it? Yeah. And I don't really want to have to go to like a message board website thing.
It just
doesn't get the numbers anymore, does it?
We're far too lazy. But from that lovely stuff to some lovely comic books for you lovely people to check out. Now, as always, the guest goes first. So, yep. Matt, what else would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
There's a book called Loud from Black Mask Studios by Maria Lovett. This is a book. It's almost like a silent comic, but it's not kind of a slave to it. It does have dialogue in it and stuff, but the vast majority of the story is told through the visuals sort of thing. It's all set in a night in a nightclub, and you sort of just follow around different characters around the club through the evening, and kind of like in a sort of meandering sort of way, encountering different characters in different situations and stuff. And it's all in this club, and there's some really crazy things going on. It's almost like I feel like if you blasted the music from the opening scene of Blade in your ears and read this comic, it would just fit really well.
It's, Jesus Christ, you get a nosebleed. I'm just looking at it now; it looks really nice.
Okay.
It's got a great the whole comic has a great atmosphere, really good sort of like build tension, some really good sort of visual ideas to sort of get you through the sort of silent parts sort of thing. Just it does have some sort of like, you know, be warned, there's like quite a lot of sort of disturbing and graphic content in it, but it's just a really cool visual comic. And it was one that I got to the end of and just thought, I don't know how you would sort of go about plotting or writing that or anything. You know, just the way it flows is really, really good. Like I say, there's not a lot of talking or anything.
It reads more like an experience rather than...
That's a good way of putting it, yeah. So I wouldn't know, sort of like how to give you sort of like much of a synopsis. But like if you like a sort of visual story told in a unique way with some really great art and some really cool ideas, I'd definitely recommend it. There's a hardcover that I think might be a bit difficult to get now, but it's really nicely put together. Like I said, for those people who sort of like to have these things, yeah, it's a really nice put together book. Yeah, and... although the story is very intense, I feel like it's a really sort of rewarding read, like to sort of read the pictures sort of thing.
Nice.
Okay, I'll have a look for that.
There's a lot to be said for sort of silent storytelling in a way.
It works sometimes, doesn't it? I quite like it, yeah. Mm. Yeah. People overwrite a lot, don't they?
Mm. Yeah. It's also, I'm trying to write something that's a little bit silent in places, and it is a tricky thing to get right. So yeah, it's a nice colourful cover as well.
I feel like it's one of the books that, you know, if I'd found this on that trip to New York, it definitely would have been a buy just based on even just the cover. Like, it's definitely my sort of thing.
That hasn't been mentioned on the show before, so
good stuff.
Who's gonna go next?
Go on, you go, V. Go on.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, I'm going to recommend one that I've talked a bit about this creator many times before. The wonderful Lise Richardson.
I read this week.
Yep. Who is a local creator to me, lives in Bath. Wonderful sort of artist.
Sorry about that, Lise.
Who does like her sort of Instagram sort of comics, Everything is Awful and things like that. But she put together... She was putting together lots of like sort of haunting strips for her Patreon, and basically they're lots of little short stories, a collection of sort of 9 lessons and hauntings, is what the book's called, and they're basically sort of short autobiographical comics. They're like ghost stories, but in a really, it's just already it's near the top of the list of what this year is going to produce. I'm a huge fan of Lisa's work anyway, because and I'm deeply missing the fact that I don't have a like a flip calendar, because we had one in the house for last year, and it's just an absolute joy, like month by month, seeing what the new artwork was of Lisa's work. But instead, we've got this book, and I'll take that because this is it's wonderful stuff. I know Tony on Never Write Anything, he wrote a wonderful review of it this week, which I highly recommend you go and check out.
Thanks, man.
He pretty much nails a lot of it. But this is a book, and I know it's been doing the rounds. It has been doing the rounds. I thankfully got a copy of it because I follow her on Patreon.
Okay, you're on a Patreon, eh? Yeah, because this came out as part of the Patreon, didn't it, as well?
She was doing it before the book was published. Yeah. So I was always like checking out to see what these little strips are like. You know, she'd update them, and then she was putting them together as a book. And as I followed the Patreon, I got a copy of the book, which was very, very kind and very nice. Came with a nice little postcard and a thank you. But this is just a gorgeous book, so well put together, wonderful format, and the artwork is stunning and beautiful. But the stories themselves, I'm not going to spoil too much because I think this is very much an experience type book as well. But one of the things that got me about this book is, even though that like an autobiographical book is usually like someone talking about their experience, and sometimes you can't relate to it, but these are like they're ghost stories that I think most of us out there have lived. And lots of people are like, well, I don't believe in ghosts, but you've probably experienced a similar thing that she talks about here. Like, I mean, I don't have a dog, but like those walking the dog at night and there's that shadow in the corner of your eye and it's just always there. Is it getting closer? Is it not? Is there something there? And there's lots of questions like that. And there's certain stories about where she goes on a run and she can see something in the distance, but no matter how close she gets to it, it's seemingly not there. It's not on any sort of map. It's genuinely spooky stuff, but told in a wonderful sort of tone. And speaking of tone, I know that Tony, as a dog walker, I mean, a lot of these sort of stories are like as she's been walking a little dog, the little things she's come across, and you know.
Yeah, it's funny actually because I sent her, I was just to let you know, Lisa, I did a little review of it if you fancy having a read of it, see what you think. And she sent back saying her dog says hello because she's got quite a cool dog.
Yeah.
I said, that's cool. And yeah. You do. And I actually think the art speaks a lot to this because it's easy in these days of saying autobiographical comics. We think of some sort of, you know, rushed off black and white thing. But each page is a panel in this book and each page could easily be a print.
Yes.
I think they're so drenched in colour. So you've got like almost like a realistic background with, you know, fully realised skies and trees and hills and all sorts of things. It's gorgeously painted. But she portrays herself a little bit more cartoony in the foreground, which I think is a really nice little counterpoint to what she's doing there. Yeah. And adds that personality to it, which I really liked. I don't know what you thought, V.
Oh, yeah, totally. There is a real... I mean, her the way she actually sort of renders landscapes and seasons, because this is a seasonal book.
Exactly.
It goes from lush greens to autumnals to, and you know, sort of wintry nights. And some
that
of the
that big sun in the sky behind her when she's walking the dog is one of my favourite pages this year. I think I really like it.
And as someone who's seen this similar sort of skyline as well, there's one of the stories. What's it? Which one's the one it's called? I'll just look at it. Under the Hill. Where she's sort of she's on the top and she's looking over like Bath and stuff, and it's the, you know, the lights are going down, but you know all the buildings are starting to light up, and you can see the sort of the breath. You can see your breath in the air, and the light is just so wonderfully captured.
Yeah, you should get to it, don't you? There's something quintessentially West Country about it to me. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I know Bath and stuff, but the sort of the country and the farmed countryside and the standing stones which appear.
I mean, this really, the basically like all of the sort of places and the way everything looks is what my life I've grown up around.
Yeah, yeah.
But take all of that away. You know, if the words weren't there, this would be a stunning art book.
Still work, man. Yeah, totally.
But the words themselves are wonderfully poetic. There's a real poetry, wonderfully done. There's no speech bubbles or anything like that. It really the way she sort of, even the design,
there's a
of the
nice
page,
narrated quality to it, isn't there? Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
And there is a real sense of the words working with the artwork. There's a you know, it's not just sort of doing a nice bit of artwork and then someone's just stuck some words over the top of it. Everything sort of works in unison. The design of the book, wonderfully put together. It's a square sort of bound book, which is great.
Yeah, I like the format, man, with a perfect bound, with a spine to it. There's a bit of heft to it, isn't there?
The pages are nice and thick as well. So you feel you're getting really something substantial. But, you know, this already is one of the highlights of the year for me. I've said before, like, especially when we come to, like, the horror episodes and things like that, and certainly when we're speaking to Sarah Gordon about it, to do a spooky story, a genuinely sort of a ghostly atmospheric sort of tale, because ghost stories, you know, some of the spookiest ones, you don't see the ghosts. You know it's just getting the sense of, if you can inspire in someone the feeling of what that moment is like, that's how you get them. And I know, you know, who hasn't had to walk home alone when it's dark, and sometimes, like, you just got your headphones in your ears and you're just thinking, what is that shadow? You know, the way the shadow moves on a wall, and you double take for a second, and maybe you speed up your walk just a little bit, because it's like, I better get home a little bit quicker. You know,
I walked home once through Cardiff Town Centre on a Friday night. That's fucking frightening.
For everyone else, if Tony's doing it. But no, I mean, you know, the highest of recommendations for this. If you go to leeserichardsonart.bigcartel.com, the book's at £10, well worth it. I think she'll sell out the first run fairly soon, actually, because I've seen an awful lot of, I mean, certainly we were talking about earlier, people taking pictures of, I've got this book. And I know I did the same. I was like, look at this. This is lovely, because it was just wonderful looking at it. And also, I just wanted to let Lise know that I got it. And then I just kept seeing the same cover appear, like, dotting on my Twitter thread. And, you know, it's wonderful to see. It's good that... And I think Lise is... If you're not following Lise on Instagram and Twitter, which is twitter.com, Lise Richardson, which is L-I-S-E Richardson. On Instagram, she's Lise Richardson Art. Just go forth, follow her. She's also, I know we've given out badges for a lot of people who are them, but she's just a really good egg. Whenever we're at BAM and stuff, she was just always.
Yeah, she was next to us when she won, yeah. Yeah, good stuff. Yeah.
And I'm even looking at, like, a homemade sort of badge that I've got stuck on the wall that just says, maybe I'm dreadful.
Oh, well, I think I remember you buying that.
Yeah. So there you go. Hauntings by Lise Richardson.
Good stuff, man.
Dreadful.
Yeah, she obviously knew you.
It's actually got the title of one of her other sort of books as well.
Oh, it's your name, the book after you. Good. Do you want to go deep?
Sure. I finally got my ass around to reading The Department of Truth, issue 1.
Oh, cool. Nice.
By writer James Tynion, is it?
Tynion,
the fourth. Art by Martin Simmons. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm on the hype train. I was kind of not sure about the first couple of pages in, and then I was like, there's a point where you get to, and I was locked into the book, and I've got the rest of the issues that are out, but haven't read them yet.
You know, I sent them to you, don't you? You know,
I know you did, yeah, but I thought it's best to kind of...
I bought the physical book as well, just because I wanted it, yeah.
I think I'd get it in trade. Like, I do try to buy the comics.
Yeah, me too. Somebody like that we've known for a long time, Martin. He kills on this, man. He'd be up for a few best artists, really, I think.
Really good. I can't appreciate enough. I want a printed version of this. Yeah. I really want the printed version. I think when it comes out in trade, I'll get the trade.
Why do you think it'd work in magazine size?
Yeah, I agree.
Those panels, there's so much art and so much in it, isn't there?
The kind of the bigger newsstand UK size. Kind of, you know, 2000 AD size comic. I got the synopsis in front of me from the Image website, but I really don't want to read it out because it kind of takes
it
out of the
niche, doesn't it? A bit
completely.
Yeah. I remember when we talked about this, God, about 3 or 4 months ago. I said exactly the same, man. I don't know why they put that on there. Yeah.
It's really, and also reading it, you're just like, oh, that sounds like every other comic book trying to do stuff like that. But if you were kind of want a really nice, sharp, intelligent take on stuff that's going on now, you'll go on, you read stuff and you think, fuck, you know, that's what they're talking about online and discussing all that shit that happened to Capitol Hill like a couple of weeks ago.
And one of the best twists in a comic for a long time as well that you don't see coming. Yeah.
It's very interesting. I can't wait to see where they're going with it. And I think, like, some people recommend this on films. Don't look it up on the net. Just go in blind, get the first issue, and see what you think. Yeah. You'll know by knowing a couple of pages' time whether it's for you or not.
Yeah. Look at mine. Do you mean he was doing small UK small press stuff when we first met him, and now Christ, it's one of the biggest books, isn't it?
Yes, it's great.
And critically, especially.
Deservedly so.
Yeah. And I'm super jealous of Sarah Harris because she's got a page from it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, an absolutely amazing page from it.
Yeah.
It says in this genre is horror thriller. It's very hard to put this in a genre.
It's almost like the movie JFK turned up to 23 or something, isn't it? You know, sort of.
Thriller.
With a bit of
X-Files
thrown in, I suppose.
Anything could be called a thriller. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It's a hard one. I wouldn't like to be the person that had to do that listing.
Yeah.
Right then, Tate, what have you got?
Okay, so I'm going back in the back into the old world. Angry Planet, written by Alan Hebden, art by Massimo Belardinelli. Originally appeared in, does anyone know?
It was almost
2008. You got the right letter. It's Tornado, issues 1 to 22. So the 24th of March, the 18th of August, 1979. It wasn't a very long running comic, Tornado, and after that it folded into 2000 AD. But unlike, is it the Mind of Wolfie Smith, I think, and Black Hawk, which folded in from Tornado into 2000 AD. And you know the way they used to Hatch, Match and Dispatch, they called it, didn't they? And stories from Star-Lord or whatever.
That sounds sexy when you say it, Tony.
Thank you, mate. This didn't make it. So this is just 22 installments, so 5-page installments, in a nice sort of magazine-sized trade. The Fleetway Files, it is. Letters by, you name it, Peter Knight, Steve Potter, Tony Jacob, Tom Frame, John Aldrich, and a number of other people who just weren't credited, so they don't know. The original commissioning editor was Kevin Gosnell, who sort of 2000 AD fans will know. Published then by Fleetway and now by Hibernia Press, in coordination with Rebellion and the Treasury of British Comics. Hibernia Press were interesting. They put out limited runs.
We've spoken about them a few times, haven't we?
We have, man. Yeah, I know Rich Sheaf talked about them, didn't he?
Yeah, and I got that Scream, that publication about Scream.
Of course you did. Yeah, I was trying to remember what that was. Yeah. Yeah, they do some really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
This comic, okay, right, let's quickly deal with the cover. The cover is, it looks like an archival cover almost. So it's got the red, I sent you a picture of it. It's got the sort of red and the title of the comic, and the image on it is in black and white because all of the interiors for this story were in black and white. And it actually shows a sort of four-armed creature attacking the central character. And he says, by Tharsis, it's a nightmare. Now, that is the only alien creature in the comic because that is actually an illusion. So it's a slightly misleading image cover. Image for the cover. It's slightly misleading. It's very dramatic, and it's Belardinelli, so it's going to be amazing. But it's like, so, and I'll tell you why as I go along. So in the first years of the 21st century, man went to Mars and started drilling for oil, but he didn't find oil, oxygen. He found oxygen underneath the Earth, and oxygen began, and after 25 years, the atmosphere became breathable on Mars. I love stories about Mars, by the way. I don't know, even before Total Recall, which me and Dan talked about for about an hour and a half the other day.
And why not?
I love, and even sort of from the Martian Chronicles and all that. So there's something about, and Babylon 5 had a great Martian storyline, didn't they? Anyway, I love stuff about Mars. But in 2062, the first Martian child was born. And a number of them decided to stay on the planet and make it their home rather than returning to Earth. And over the generations, their lungs could only accept the air of Mars. They couldn't go to Earth because of the gravity, stuff like that. So, but Mars has a, I think it's called the Mars Incorporated, has a big stranglehold. So this is very, very Schwarzenegger, isn't it? So Mars Incorporated has a stranglehold over the planet, and they control the flow of water, and they keep hiking the prices up. Matthew Markham, He was a born Martian, and he's trying to sort of fight with his family to survive. But they get fucked over by the Mars company, and he decides to fight back. He said, right, I've had enough. Martians in this book are called Marshies. Now, if you looked at Markham, he looks like an older commandee. That's okay. what his stamp. And he quickly starts, he's recruited as a spokesperson. So you can, as was the nature, there's a lot of story in 5 pages of Tornado. Same as we used to get in 2000 AD, didn't we? You know, there was none of this decompressed storytelling. It was like, you know, a whole comic happened in 5 pages in Tornado. So there's a lot of story in this. Mm. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on. But right at the start of it, he goes to Earth and he can't deal with the pressure. So he has to lay in a bath. he goes to try to speak to the United Nations about, you know, the plight of Martians, Marshies. And he has to actually lay in a bath because the water is stopping the pressure on his chest, allowing him to breathe. So you get this whole sequence where he actually attacks someone by pushing his bath down the stairs and banging into someone. It's pretty nuts. he asks the UN to grant Mars its own independence, but the UN votes 172-0 against that. And so war begins. So there's like a revolution on the planet. The soldiers, it shows the time, it shows 1979. So the armored soldiers from Mars Inc. look just exactly like the Cylons from the original Battlestar Galactica story. I'll send you a picture of them in a minute. There's just no mistaking it. That's exactly who they are. there's a couple of the ships in it who just look like Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica ships. It's just, there's no getting around that either. But it has got a real edge to it. It really has. Life is proper cheap on Mars, and there's some great space races, and they're in like speeders that dash across the sort of rocky outcroppings of Mars, and Markham begins to build the resistance around him. You get some really fucked up stuff. It's quite violent. I don't know whether comics for kids would be that violent these days, you know, weekly newsstand comics. But at one point, Markham kicks this geezer who's called, I think he's called the Samurai or something, and he kicks him, and his face lands on like a metal crate. But because it's so cold, his face sticks to the crate, and this man starts screaming. And he pulls himself away, and he pulls off half the skin off his face. So he pulls off his eyelid and his earlobe and all that sort of thing. So it's pretty lively. So the battle roars across the planet, and some robotic hounds. They have these sort of bloodhounds, but they're like robots. Typical 2000 AD Robo Hunter kind of fare. Chase a small bunch of freedom fighters down into the sort of caverns beneath the planet, and whilst there they discover alien technology that was left there by the Martians at you know millions of years ago when dinosaurs were on the Earth. And this becomes, oh look, we've got this, there's these machines that help fix Markham's broken legs, and it's just great fun. It's so good. Hebden manages to end every single 5 pages with a cliffhanger. It's like, oh my God, what's going to happen now? They tried to kill Markham at one point by freezing him. It's fucking frightening. So one of the installments ends with him just completely frozen in his bath on Earth. And you think, well, he's fucked now. You know, it's a bit like that. I love Ballard and Ellie. I was trying to think through it, and I genuinely think he's my favourite 2000 AD artist, which I know is a bit, people are going, oh, what about Gibbons or Carlos or, I don't know, Bolland or McMahon or someone like that. But yeah, I just, but
if,
really
if,
like,
it's a personal choice, though. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
if it's your favourite. Well, if people sort of say, well, what about this person? Well, that's fair enough. It's yours. This is
no, right. I accept they're good. But I think it's just maybe that's who had that big impact on me as a kid reading it. I mean, he's still my favourite Slane artist. You know, there's loads of stuff, Meltdown Man. There's loads of stuff that is just like so fucking weird. What is he doing? The story reads like it's something from maybe a Harry Harrison novel, something like that. It's got that sort of classic science fiction, pre-Star Wars. Science fiction is dangerous. We're on this planet. It's going to kill us. We're going to fight back, you know, element to it. There's a bit of a sort of 1970s, we're all punks, let's revolt against the government feel to it as well. As I say, all in black and white, because it appeared as all in black and white, I think, in Tornado. Just great stuff. It's only £10.49. I think it's 95 pages, something like that, I think. But it's well worth it. And I bought one as a present. I bought two because I really like it. And then I got on a I got on a Ballardinelli tip, and I dragged out all his Slain. I dragged out, you know, all Mean Arena. I dragged out Ace Truck. I ordered some Ace Trucking Co. that I was missing, you know, sort of thing. But if you can go to Comixy, so it's available on Comixy, Comixy, comixy.co.uk, and you can buy it there. When mine came within a matter of days, it came very quickly. If you go to at Hibernia Books, H-I-B-E-R-N-I-A Books, Hibernia Books on Twitter, you can follow Dave McDonald, who's on there. And, yeah, they put some good stuff out. And I think this is the first of a series of books they're going to start putting out. There's going to be stuff that wasn't, like, super popular from the 2000-ish back catalogue. So I'm hoping we get some stuff from, like, Star-Lord and all this sort of thing, you know, the books that were running at the same time. I don't think they're the ones who put out the Strontium Dog stuff, but they do put out some really interesting stuff. Go on there. And it's the same place that sells Dave Brown's comics as well. So you can also go and buy a couple of Dave's comics while you're there.
Oh,
yeah, so it's The Angry Planet by Alan Hebden, Massimo Ballardinelli. There you go. Interesting story about Ballardinelli. I was once in a comic shop, and it was a comic shop that Dave Gibbons used to come in. And he came in, and he was saying to everyone, has anyone heard from Massimo Ballardinelli? We can't get hold of him. So I think he just thought, I'm just going to retire. Enjoy living in Italy. Yeah. And he was quite worried, Dave, but I think he got hold of him in the end. Yeah, there you go. Way for shows, I don't know.
Yeah, it's quite lengths to go to, sort of desperation.
Like, yeah, finding Tony and anyone. His mates. Yeah. Anyone heard of anyone spoke to him? It's like that, you know.
Oh, God. But he was all right. So that's amazing.
Yeah, it turns out he's all right. He has sadly passed since, but yeah, he was an amazing talent. Just brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of amazing talent, thank you very much, Matt, for joining us this week. It's been a good laugh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thanks very much for having me on, guys.
Sorry, it was a bit all over the shop this week.
yeah. Stuff usually is whenever I'm involved.
No, but it's always good. Well, hopefully good value for money, although it's free. So it doesn't really matter. But if there's anything you want us to talk about on upcoming shows, or if there's anything we discussed on this week's episode you want us to further go through, then you can, several different ways you can get in touch with us. You can email us awesomecomicpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And we've talked about it a couple of times, but join the group Awesome Comics Talk, where there's art threads, actual comic discussion, not rants or like people arguing and stuff. It's proper discussion, which is quite nice. And it's a healthy and lively community on there, and you're all brilliant. And speaking of brilliance, thank you for listening to this episode, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, just subscribe and leave a review. Helps get the word out about this show, all the comics we talk about from all over the world, or whatever, as well as all the nonsense that we talk about as well. But there's actual comics on this show. And likewise, if there's other networks like Spotify, Amazon, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod Harold Shitmum.
Sorry, that made me. No one wanna, right, that's got me. It got me. We were having a discussion before we started recording, and that was a joke that was made in some outtakes of a show, and it made me laugh then, and it's just completely thrown me for a loop again. Well done. Well done, Tony. Well done, Tony.
Thank you.
And, yes, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Neveronanything.com. There you go. Easy.
There you go. Or you're a pro now, aren't you?
Yeah. But I think there's six things gone up this week. I'm working hard. Yeah. Go and read it.
What about the website?
Oh, yeah.
Inserting things. Right. Dan, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. And the cover reveal is going to be this Wednesday. Got Thursday, Friday is going to be the previously catch-ups, and then week after that the issue is starting.
Good right. stuff, man.
Dan, you have to be silent for a couple of seconds, right? We don't want a response about this. We're just going to say this. Folks, when you see the new Vanguard pages, you'll shit your pants. You will literally They are fucking...
I'll tell you what, man. I was thinking about this the other day. Your pages are better than most big two comics out there at the moment.
Oh, thanks, man.
Genuinely, I really do believe that. Mm. It's just so much in them.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of work in these ones.
Yeah, definitely. Wait till people see them.
Yeah, they're going to be great. Yeah, so check that out. And follow my wafflings or whatever I'm talking about. Or maybe just picture my cats. On Twitter and Instagram, at Jester Diablo. And the marvellous Matt Simmons. Where can people find you and your lovely comics again?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Sheriff Freak, and you can check out my comics at mattsimmonscomics.bigcartel.com or read Galaxia for free at bastardgalaxia.com.
Galaxia's great, man. Made me laugh. Fucking brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, really pleased. Thank you.
And shout out for having a really easy to remember Twitter name. It goes a long way, people. It goes a long way.
By the way, so I don't want to get a reputation, but your username is Freak.
He's got a reputation now. He's been on this show.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's all downhill from here.
Everyone will be jealous.
Oh dear. So yes, yeah, stay tuned because we've got the next couple of weeks. There's going to be some fun shows in the next couple of weeks as well. But until then, go forth. Stay safe and healthy and happy wherever you are. We're going to keep doing this every week, and you can just laugh at us falling apart. but seriously, go forth, read and discover some indie comics. Let us know about them as well, because we love discovering comics. And we love you. And from Dan, Tony, Matt and myself, have a brilliant week. And what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Wasn't our best.
No.
Yeah,
no,
could have been better. I'll put that in the top 10, though.
It sounded like your batteries were running low, Dan.
It did a bit, didn't it? Mm. It's like having a stroke or something.
Yeah. Top 10 of 2021.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Don't have a stroke when we're trying to record, Dan. That's disgraceful.
Yeah. Again.
It's running in the morning.
Keeps your normal masturbation joke.
Hey! Takes the edge off.
Finish on a wank joke. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Dan, he didn't say bye. He wanked.
No.
Yeah, he's too busy. He had his mouth full.
Well, I'd mug off the listeners.